May it please the court. Your honors, thank you. My name is Gary Fielder. I represent Mr. Thomas Lofton in this matter. And I know I have limited number of minutes, but I can't let this opportunity pass to just express my thanks as a sole practitioner. It's just an honor to appear in front of you, and noting the present environment, I'm just honored by that, Your Honor. I really think this is an important case for a couple of different reasons, although I know that Mr. Lofton is in a relatively unenviable position, particularly having been convicted in this particular case. But I don't think it's as much about Mr. Lofton and the position that he found himself in as it is about generally our police officers in the state of Colorado being able to execute a normal search warrant in this particular fashion. The court may note that after trial I appealed because at the original motions hearing, the district court really did not allow me to proceed, found on the face of the warrant and the supporting documents that the warrant was executed in a reasonable way. But upon getting a hearing, I was able to ask some questions, and of course the court has reviewed the record. It was at the motions hearing of January 8th, 2010 that I actually found out that the law enforcement officers in this case had asked for a no-knock warrant and had been denied by the local district court judge in Adams County. I thought that was interesting because... Yes.
Before you reach the merits, the issue that's nagging at me has to do with the supplemental authority, People versus Butler. Did you receive that?
Yes, I did.
That case by one of the other divisions of this court referred to a U.S. Supreme Court case called Hudson.
Yes.
And looking at that case, agreed in its interpretation of that case and said that a suppression of evidence is no longer a remedy in a criminal case for violations of the knock and announce rule. So how do you deal with that?
Well, I think that the knock and announce issue is not relevant for purposes of the Lofton matter. Because I note that if a law enforcement agency does not knock and announce, that violates a particular policy consideration of just announcing your presence as an officer so that everybody inside can prepare. So that if you don't knock and announce, that may be a violation, but not the type of violation that a district court judge would suppress evidence. However, in this case, there really was a knock and announce. It's really not the focus of my argument. The focus of my argument is whether you do knock and announce or you don't knock and announce, law enforcement must still execute the warrant reasonably. So clearly there could be situations where a military style operation such as this one could get a little out of hand. And so my focus,
repeating the knock and announce and saying that what happened in the back part of the house was unreasonable.
Yes, because the officers found the door was open. They still knocked and announced. They said they did a countdown of 10. So that seemed to be okay. Now, of course, I was challenging that because I wanted to hear it from the officers under oath. But I heard it under oath. And so
isn't the issue that we're here for today is to determine whether or not the use of a tear gas canister deployed in the back of the residence at the time the officers entered the front of the residence, was that reasonable under the circumstances, under the totality of the circumstances?
I think that is the precise issue that we're here to determine. And so I can see certain circumstances where the use of either flashbang devices or a real show of force, of course, in today's environment, we often see SWAT teams well-armed, protected with certain armaments and gear. And we've almost come to expect that, but I'm drawing an exception with the use of CS gas. I'm not able to pronounce the very lengthy chemical name that means, but we've often come to hear the term CS gas or tear gas.
But this was gas only. There was no flashbang device.
That's exactly right. So we've seen some cases in that flashbang device realm, but I can't find any cases on point with regard to the use of CS gas per se in a closed environment. Of course, when you use CS gas to disperse a riot, that I think is generally acceptable. You're in the open air, the gas is dissipating. The individuals who are in a riot situation or an open environment can run away and get away from it. But when you're in a closed basement and tear gas is dropped into that closed area, that person can't run freely. In fact, my client, as the court may recall, was found halfway out of one of those small windows in the basement gasping for air. That same window could have been barred. My client was a healthy adult. He could have been disabled.
But before that, he was in the bathroom trying to flush the drugs down the toilet.
I understand the policy concerns of protecting officers, ensuring that they employ techniques that decrease the likelihood of a suspect destroying evidence. There are policy issues that clearly have to be balanced. And that's why, of course, I'm trying to get it a little away from Mr. Lofton, because the court could just envision the use of this type of gas in the execution of a normal search warrant on basically a day-to-day basis, I think causes health concerns. The officers admitted at the second motions hearing that the house would be deemed contaminated and hazmat would have to be brought in. So although my client leased the basement, and I think that gives him standing, the homeowner now finds out that his house has been contaminated. A flashbang device wouldn't do that. A show of great force would not do that. So there are property considerations for every time CS gas is used in the execution of a normal search warrant.
But counsel, let me direct you to what I think is the heart of this issue. What exactly made the use of tear gas not reasonable or unreasonable?
Well, the gas itself, we breathe oxygen as human beings. Breathing that oxygen in a closed environment is going to cause more than just watery eyes.
It's not per se unreasonable to use the tear gas, right?
Well, I think that there are some cases which clearly demonstrate, even the Geneva Convention talks about, if a person is barricaded in the house, if it's a last option and you've got to get the people out of the house. I would like to bring the court's attention to one study that might be available, and I did mention this to the Attorney General. There was a study released by Hugh Henrich, Dr. Hugh Henrich, that's H-E-I-N-R-I-C-H, and that was commissioned by John Danworth of the U.S. State's Office of Special Counsel to investigate the use of CS gas against the Branch Davidians in Waco, Texas. What Dr. Henrich opined was that there are two primary factors. Number one,
is this a part of the record?
It's not. This is why I'm just mentioning it, because I think it's available as a government document that could be reviewed by your honors.
Well, let's assume that, because I know you have limited time, that it's not per se unreasonable, as many authorities and many courts have found. Okay, let's assume that. What made it unreasonable in this case? And what I want to focus on, if my understanding is that the police had a discussion that talked about there being weapons on site, there being drugs on site, there being an extensive criminal history with the defendant, there being surveillance cameras on site. So what made it unreasonable if all of that is true and that was their understanding before they entered?
I believe that the initial request for a no-knock warrant, which was denied, was one of the factors. Because had it been a situation where the local district court judge had found that based upon the intelligence and based upon the confidential informant, that it rose to a level indicating that a no-knock warrant would be constitutionally sufficient, I would have no argument. But in the execution of and that was denied by Judge Moss in Adams County, in the execution of a normal search warrant, where there's not indication that people have barricaded themselves, not sufficient indication that they're armed to such a degree that a no-knock warrant would be allowed, then I think we're treading on dangerous waters by allowing law enforcement to contemplate the use of such gas in the execution of a normal search warrant. That's why I focused that issue from Judge Hawthorne.
Well, but doesn't the detective's affidavit refer to an extensive weapon and violence history and drug history?
It does, and I believe that ultimately it was tested. That same exact affidavit was tested by Judge Moss, denied for no knock, and although it did certainly amount to probable cause, I think that the execution of most search warrants at least raise some concerns always about officer safety, you know, the prior offense of the defendant. But in this case, they also knew it was a basement. They also knew that there was limited way to get out of that basement within the 10-second countdown. It wasn't like 10 seconds was enough to get out of the basement. There were other people other than Mr. Lofton down there. The officers did say at the motions hearing that when they broke the glass in the basement, they couldn't see the complete room. And so they threw those, and I've used the term chemical munitions on purpose, because that's what they are. They're the type of instruments that you would expect to see in war. And now they're being utilized on the population because Mr. Lofton is one of the people, as much as he may have a bad record, as much as he may be in the Department of Corrections right now, he's still one of the people. And I think the people deserve some level of protection that does not allow the government to use this type of CS gas in a closed environment when they have the gas mask and the person who's about ready to be searched does not. Could I reserve the rest of my time?
You may. You have about 3.5 minutes.
Perfect, and thank you so much. Counsel, thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Melissa Allen. I'm here on behalf of the people of the state of Colorado. I think it's interesting to note that when this case was remanded originally, it was remanded for the court to make a determination about whether the officers complied with the knock and announce rule. It was specifically about Mr. Lofton and whether his Fourth Amendment rights had been violated. And now we've kind of morphed into this whole other area of whether, in general, tear gas is bad for all the people, not just Mr. Lofton, and the reasonableness of its use. I wonder if we've gone astray from what the original remand order was, which was, did they comply with the knock and announce rule? Did they execute this warrant properly? And as far as that is concerned, with what is required from knock and announce, knocking, announcing, waiting 10 seconds, and then entering the property, I don't think there's any question that they complied with the knock and announce rule. We've moved then into the reasonableness of this use of tear gas. And while that may have been beyond the scope of this court's original remand order, the trial court certainly did hear testimony on that and then issued a very, I think, detailed ruling about why it was absolutely reasonable to use tear gas in this situation. I mean, I think it's completely irrelevant that they applied for a no-knock warrant and didn't get it and then came back and performed a knock and announce and used tear gas. They used tear gas because they were worried about the fact that Mr. Lofton was a known drug dealer, was a known weapons offender, had surveillance cameras set up on his front lawn so that he could see when the police were coming to try to get his drugs away from him. And in fact, after a very brief 10 seconds in getting into the house, what did we find? He's flushed a large amount of his meth down the toilet, which they were able to determine how much that was by testing the water. There were two loaded weapons downstairs. You know, they discussed this before they went in.
Was there any indication in the affidavit where the weapons were kept?
There was not. My recollection, Your Honor, of the affidavit is that it was the affidavit more generally commented on his criminal history, that he had had a previous conviction for a weapons offense, and that he was known to possibly be violent. It was not specific, but I don't believe that it was necessary that it be specific. I think the reasonableness comes down to what the officers knew at the time, and that's why they met before they executed the warrant and had this discussion among all of them, and the decision was made that once the knock and announce was completed, they would break the glass and put the two tear gas canisters into the basement. They did know, I might add, they did know that he lived in the basement, which is where the tear gas went. It's not like they opened these and threw them into every window in the residence. And I think that they probably correctly assumed that the weapons would be in the basement as well, since that was his kind of area of the house. I supplemented with the Butler case because it's this court's, it's a more recent decision by this court, but I don't even think that we have to reach that subject because nothing was suppressed and it was properly not suppressed because there was no violation here. The warrant was executed properly, reasonably, and there's not been any allegation that there was no PC in the warrant. So I don't think that we have to address that issue. I think this court can just affirm based on the trial court's ruling.
So do you believe we can simply say that the remand was limited to a knock and announce determination, and that determination having been made, that the case should be affirmed on those grounds?
I think you can. Yes. I don't really have anything further unless this court has any.
How do you weigh and balance Mr. Lofton's right to be free from an unreasonable search with the use of tear gas under these circumstances?
Well, I think Mr. Lofton was free to not have an unreasonable search against him by being a law-abiding citizen. I mean, it's not as if the officers willy-nilly chose to use tear gas. They were clearly worried about their safety, and that's something that has to be taken into consideration.
Could there have been other less severe precautions taken by the officers?
Well, I can't think of any other way to ensure, when you've got the possibility, and we later learn the fact of loaded weapons in a home, the possibility, and then we later learn the fact that he in the past has attempted to flush drugs and then try to do the same thing here. I'm not sure what else could have been done. I mean, they did try to get the no knock, they didn't get it. But I don't think based on the record that we have, there's any question that the tear gas was used for officer safety reasons as opposed to let's try to keep him from flushing the drugs.
Well, and ironically, isn't part of the reason sometimes for denying a no-knock request is for safety reasons, because they're concerned about startling the defendant who might turn around and end up
shooting or,
yeah.
Yes, I think that's true. And so, I mean, it is, it's an interesting, there's an interesting balance there, but I think once you've been told by a court, you can't do a no knock, and then you're taking the time to alert this person to your presence, which is what they did, you have to be able to make sure that your officers are safe once, you know, they're going in after he's had 10 seconds notice. And that's a danger in and of itself. I can't imagine, I mean, I know we were, some of the cases that were cited, we talked about flash bang devices, but those seem to me to be more frowned upon than, you know, tear gas we're talking about.
I I'm just looking at your brief because I don't recall for sure. Did you make this argument in your answer brief about the limited remand?
No.
Are the remand being made for knock and announce purposes only?
No, I struggled with whether I should, to be honest with you. I kind of thought initially when I wrote my brief that this was kind of an extension of it because the execution of the knock and announce, I mean, using the tear gas was part of that. So I guess technically it could be, but at the same time, of course, in preparing for this argument, I thought, you know, it really was just a remand on the knock and announce portion of it. But then obviously there was a lot more testimony taken than that at the hearing.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. I would just ask that this court affirm the defendant's convictions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Fielder, you have 3 minutes, 25 seconds.
Thank you. And I must say, as the lawyer who was there, I know Judge Phelps and I know Judge Moss, and at the time of the original motions hearing, when I was challenging the execution, I was somewhat taken aback because I'd been practicing in front of Judge Phelps for so many years, and I thought, you know, I just deserve a hearing. I need a motions hearing. And so when I went back for my motions hearing after conviction, based upon this court's order, I didn't really feel, although there was specific interest from this court with regard to whether the knock and announce portion of the entry was done appropriately, I felt like I could also explore this issue of reasonable execution of the warrant.
Let me ask you the same question I asked Ms. Allen. What could the officers have done that would, in your estimation, have been reasonable, that was less severe than using tear gas?
Had the officers not used the tear gas, I think everything would have gone according to plan. Although that's always a question in the officer's mind, when they did get down into the basement, no one was armed. They did find weapons, but they were in the places that they were before the knock and announce. There wouldn't have been a shootout. Maybe Mr. Lofton was able to get rid of some of the evidence. It didn't work for him, and the like. But once those chemical munitions were entered into the residence, I really do argue that that is a per se violation, because I don't think those gaseous munitions should be used in a closed environment, particularly a small basement, much less even a big auditorium like this.
Of course, that's sort of like Monday morning quarterbacking, isn't it?
I know. And
everything's okay because everything turned out okay.
And it can always be different. And of course, I greatly sympathize with law enforcement. I'm not criticizing anything other than their use of CS gas. I just feel that in the execution of a search warrant, they are putting themselves at risk most certainly, and they take every step necessary to ensure their safety, but contaminating the true owner of that property's house, leaving Mr. Lofton probably liable for those damages, possibly hurting someone, if someone other than Mr. Lofton had been disabled or an infant, possibly killing someone, I don't think we should encourage law enforcement in the use of this CS gas unless otherwise authorized by the district court, such as we do in a no-knock situation, or when the circumstances so require because of barricading or other threat to the general public. I don't think, with all due respect, officer safety in and of itself should be allowed to, should allow the officers to use this level of gas, because I think there's potential harm to the individuals in that house, much less the property that's going to have to be decontaminated after the use of such munitions. Thank you so much, Your Honors.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Fielder. And thank you, Ms. Allen. And thank you both for your excellent arguments this morning and for your willingness to appear here for these oral arguments. This matter will stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course.